Blog Talk Radio.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to the 321st podcast of Rough Riders Radio. I'm the host, you're the Rough Rider. Tonight's topic, Saudi Arabia has been Jamal Khashoggi'd. Well, let's get right to it, shall we? Actually, a little background for the importance of the murder of the Washington Post and a green card, U.S. green card resident, Jamal Khashoggi, murdered in a Saudi Arabian embassy in Istanbul. A little context to see the real ramifications and the real significance and the profound of this. This story goes all the way back to 1744 when the ambitious but unremarkable clan of Al-Saud, one of many clans that divided up the vast Arabian desert, allied with a puritanical fundamentalist named Muhammad ibn al-Wahhab. The Al-Saud clan allied with Wahhab and his followers known as Wahhabis, who in their fervor could fight as well as preach. The deal was simple. The Wahhabis would help the Al-Sauds expand through conquest from a tiny sliver in the Arabian Peninsula's central desert to a vast empire. And in return, the Al-Sauds would adopt Wahhabism as official policy. It worked. The Al-Sauds are the ruling party of today in Saudi Arabia, just to remind people. The Saudi Empire, however, collapsed in 1818, defeated by the much stronger Ottoman Empire, which seized much of the Arabian Peninsula for itself. But Wahhabist Islam had taken root, and the Wahhabis and the Al-Saud maintained their strategic alliance from 1744 on up through today. Because Saudi rulers needed the Wahhabis' support to stay in power, they need their loyalty. They need the civil society that the Wahhabi clerical establishment creates. And they also need the ideological justification for the vast, young, and in many ways artificial Saudi empire. When Abdulaziz al-Saud, the founder of Saudi Arabia and the House of Saud, was born in 1876, the area we today know as Saudi Arabia, which was a patchwork of tribal leaders, many of them loyal to the Ottoman Empire or later the British Empire. Abdulaziz wanted to restore his family's former empire. He knew that, like his forefathers, he would need the help of the Wahhabis and the zeal they brought to the battlefield. So he formed a band of quasi-renegade fundamentalist militias known as the Ikhwan, or Brothers. As before, the deal was simple. The Ikhwan would fight on behalf of Al-Saud, or the House of Saud, and in exchange could impose their ultra-conservative Islam on whomever they conquered. By the late 1920s, Al-Saud and the Ikhwan had conquered most of today's Saudi Arabia. Al-Saud, a pious Muslim, but also a forward-thinking pragmatist, began to modernize his new empire. This infuriated the Ikhwan, who saw it as a betrayal. Then the Ikhwan began to attack neighboring British-held territory, which they hoped to liberate. Al-Saud had forbidden this, wishing to remain friendly with the powerful British Empire. The Al-Saud clan and Ikhwan fell into open warfare, which ended when Al-Saud used modern machine guns to defeat the camel-riding Ikhwan at the 1929 Battle of Sabilla. After the 1929 battle, Al-Saud tried to head off future uprisings, but retained the loyalty of the Wahhabis, whose support he needed in order to ideologically justify his new nation by their religious fundamentalism as his own. He created the Ministry for the Propagation of Virtue and the Prevention of Vice, better known as the Religious Police, a fanatical and semi-autonomous band of ideological enforcers who are still an official body of the Saudi state today. Now let's fast forward. In 1948, a pot of gold was discovered. Aramco, that's Arabic American Corporation, discovered the Ghawar oil field, the mother lode of the world's oil fields. Ghawar, which went on stream in 1951, is 170 miles long and 20 miles wide. At one point, it held 170 billion barrels of proven reserves of oil. They've been pumping from that field half or more of their production for 50 years. Most of Saudi exports come from this field, about 5 million barrels per day. Ghawar today still has 70 billion barrels of oil compared to the total current U.S. proven reserves of 20 billion. That means it still holds more than three times as much as all the oil reserves in the United States. In 1950, to try and solve the problem of how to get the Saudi oil to American and Western markets, the U.S. company Bechtel, based in California, built a 1,000-mile pipeline directly from the Saudi oil fields across Jordan and the Golan Heights to Sinan in Lebanon in order to take the oil directly to the Mediterranean by pipeline. That went on stream the following year and continued to function up until the early 1970s. Year of U.S. self-sufficiency in oil production was 1970. Saudi oil didn't become important to the U.S. until the 1980s. In 1973, Saudi government led the Arab boycott of oil supplies to the United States. This led to quadrupling of the oil price from about $3 to $12 per barrel. Saudi Arabia was suddenly very much on Washington's radar screen and very rich. Saudi oil earnings went from $8.5 billion in 73 to $35 billion the next year in 1974. With that money, they began building and buying from the U.S. tanks, airplanes, and infrastructure. The United States-Saudi military relationship took off. American companies basically built the whole military infrastructure of Saudi Arabia as it is known today. Over the next 20 years, the Saudis spent some $85 to $86 billion on American arms. When you buy an airplane, you also have to have a structure to maintain them and to train people. It's a huge undertaking. In 1973, however, because of the war between Israel and the Arab states, the Saudis began to take over Aramco. They insisted on taking a 25% interest in it, pay for it in oil. By 1980, they owned 100% of Aramco. So what you have with Saudi Arabia as it is constituted today is like two spiders locked inside of a closed jar. The ruling Al-Saud family that is aligned with or allied to the religious fundamentalist, the Wahhabis. It is all or nothing. Both parties must exist alongside one another in power or and equally, or Saudi Arabia as we know it ceases to exist at all. Jamal Khashoggi was an infidel. To the Royal Crown Prince MBS, Mohammed bin Salman. Khashoggi wanted a free press, free assembly, and openness and transparency. He wanted freedom of thought and freedom of discussion that would maintain the Saudi Arabia built on the partnership of the Saudi royal family and the Wahhabis that we see today. After all, this town ain't big enough for the both of us. And that's why we can say, with the brutal dismemberment and murder of Jamal Khashoggi in the Saudi Arabian embassy in Istanbul, right in the Saudi Arabian consular general's office, okay, using a buzz saw, a bone saw, to decapitate him, cut him up into pieces, and ship him where else, that the Jamal Khashoggi's murder is nothing less or short of Saudi Arabia has been Jamal Khashoggi'd. They will never be the same. And this may be the beginning of the end of Saudi Arabia as we know it today. Thank you very much. This is the old Rough Rider. Rounding third, heading for home. And thank you for listening to our 321st podcast. And as always, stay well, keep it lit, and remember, we ride, but we know you ain't along for the ride, just for the ride, because you do decide. Thank you.